Good evening and welcome. I am your host, Goblin Queen, and thank you for tuning in to KGOB Goblin Radio. Good news, you are just in time for our UFO story hour. And what is that, you ask? Well, the next hour, I will be reading case reports from old UFO journals, specifically the journals and magazines of NUFON, or Northern UFO News, and UFO Times. Now, when you think UFOs, you might picture flying saucers, the odd light formation in the sky, but on my UFO Story Hour, we delve into the more abstract and strange reports. We're dealing with abductions, close encounters, strange creatures and humanoids, and often the overlap between UFO phenomenon and other supernatural categories. And overall, it really is an examination of the human psyche. Some may argue that there aren't extraterrestrials at all, that it's all born from the human mind. So, we are going to go through quite a few case reports, and in between them, I will provide a few of my own thoughts and dive a little deeper into any relevant topics that may come up. If that sounds good to you, sit tight, relax, and let's get started. A is a shop assistant at a computer store. The experience occurred in July and August of 1988. At Ranelagh, Dublin, when he was aged 19. It was 4 a.m. and A was in bed when he was brought into full awareness by a strange sound that appeared from nowhere. He describes it as 1,000 voices on a jet engine, and it seemed to be directly over his head. He became extremely frightened. The noise increased in intensity, and at the same time, he felt his head and neck being forced back into the pillow. He then screamed out, and the noise stopped very suddenly, leaving him drained and exhausted, but without the intense fear. This phenomenon has recurred many times since, at first several times a month, but more recently only every couple of months. Occasionally, there are difficulties in breathing as a result. A is clearly perturbed by this and would like help to understand what is going on. Whilst not strictly UFO-related, there are a number of instances on file where bedroom visitor entity experiences have developed from a similar starting point. This one is quite simple, but I included it because it sounds to me like this man could be experiencing exploding head syndrome, which, if you aren't familiar, is a parasomnia that has particular associations with perceived paranormal experiences. This is a quote from Brian Sharpless. Exploding head syndrome is a sleep disorder characterized by loud noises or a perception of explosion in one's head during wake or sleep-wake transitions. This experience has also been linked to belief in the supernatural and reported ostensibly paranormal experiences, end quote. So, basically, people hear really loud, abrupt noises as they are falling asleep or waking up. And these are noises that aren't actually being caused by anything in their exterior surroundings. It's not like you're in a dream and the building you're in starts collapsing or something, and then you wake up and it's because your cat has knocked a bunch of books off your nightstand. It's not like something in your room is causing the sound and then you wake up. It seemingly and mysteriously seems to all just come from inside your head. I think I may have experienced this once or twice, but in the form of a loud voice. One time I was definitely falling asleep or about to fall asleep, and I heard a really loud male voice yell in my room, just like, hey, or something like that. And there wasn't anybody there, and that was it. And I was just jolted awake for a second and a little bit alarmed, but then I just went back to sleep. And then I think I might have also maybe, you know, in a waking transition had that happen, or possibly been woken up by the same kind of thing, a loud voice shouting, just something really quick and abrupt. I'm not sure if that would be categorized as exploding head syndrome, but so the cause of it is not known for certain, just like so many things that have to do with the brain or the body in general. Right now, there are only theories and speculations, such as minor seizures, sudden movements, or disorder relating to the ear, or, quote, a sudden burst of neural activity in the areas of the brain responsible for processing sound. Apparently, people who experience EHS also sometimes feel a, quote, aura of electrical sensations that moves from the lower torso to the head immediately before the explosion strikes, end quote. That feels like an electrical shock. All of that can be incredibly alarming, I would imagine. It's not surprising that people would attribute it to something paranormal or external, like an alien abduction or something, or a demon, or, you know, whatever your context is. A study published in the August 2022 issue of the Journal of Sleep Research states that people who experience exploding head syndrome, quote, held stronger beliefs that aliens have visited Earth than people who haven't. Also, people who have EHS tend to have poor quality sleep. So maybe that would explain why the witness in the reports woke up exhausted and drained. He also mentioned having difficulty breathing, which I thought maybe could possibly be sleep apnea. Obviously, I can't say for sure what was going on in this case, but when I read it, I thought of exploding head syndrome. It is a very strange parasomnia, and yeah, I would imagine that it can easily feel paranormal in nature. Especially if you hear something like a jet engine, you could easily assume that some sort of craft just took off outside your window. Or if you hear a loud voice, like I did, you could naturally think someone is in your room that you can't see. Maybe there is. I don't know. But there are studies being done regarding the correlation between EHS and paranormal belief. And I think it's understandable why that is. So the data that I've quoted and cited is primarily from Brian Sharpless, who I mentioned earlier. And he is a psychologist who has been one of the leading researchers studying EHS. And all the studies and articles that I read will be included in my source list, which you can find in the description wherever you are listening. But for now, let's move on to our next report. T is an engineer, now living on a remote Scottish island, but who at the time in question, the late 1950s, was a teenager living in Cheshire. He admits to being very artistic, with a gifted imagination and a talent for psychometry, recently discovered and used to divine the best site for an archaeological dig, which his son was involved with. Exact dates cannot be recalled, circa 1957, but the location was a train bridge at Rudheath, near Northwich. He and another teenage friend had been poaching and were resting after a tiring evening's hunt. As they often did, they sat under the bridge for a smoke. Each sat on one rail of the single-track line, quote, staring unfocused towards Northwich. Half a mile in this direction is another bridge and a light signal which had blurred out of focus, but was what T's eyes fixed on. An Oz factor state now operated. Time stretched and sounds vanished, and then, quote, suddenly the fuzzy light grew and blossomed into an angel, end quote. It was an amazing sight. Some 20 feet high, with long, pale and yellow hair, white wings, and a bright central spot, surrounded by delicate patches of light that were translucent and varying in yellow, blue, pink, and green. T reports how, quote, she poured down from the lamp and formed at the base of it. The lamp was still lit and detached from her. She crossed to the right rail and moved towards us, naturally appearing larger as she did so, end quote. After watching this for a few minutes, T ran up the embankment and bumped into his friend there. They were mutually embarrassed, but his friend soon admitted that he, too, fled the, quote-unquote, angel. This friend now appears to be living somewhere in Australia. Looking back on the track, the figure was gone, and they later decided not to report their quote-unquote joint hallucination. As kids, they had been warned of a lady in the lamp in the area, which they took to be a story to prevent poaching or keep children off the tracks. Around this time, T saw various odd things. Notably, there was a brief observation of a semicircle of lights as he ran for a bus. He thought it was a crashing aircraft, as it was so large, but only the bus engine was heard gently idling, no plane. In addition, he has had a number of psychic experiences, including an out-of-body vision, where he floated up and viewed the other hands during a card game, and the sighting of a strange aircraft before such a craft was built. Once again, we have evidence that some people have extremely vivid visual experiences across a broad spectrum, including entities and UFOs, and possess artistic talents. If only we could trace the other witness. A lot of good stuff in that one. First of all, I want to note, I like that whatever investigator wrote this report up, which it could very possibly be Jenny Randall's as she edited Newfon, that there is a large correlation of people who have these types of experiences, supernatural experiences, who are creative and artistic. Why that is, who's to say for sure? I would probably theorize that in general, people who are more highly artistic and creative are more in tune with their emotions, perhaps. And maybe, perhaps you might argue that they're more perceptive in different ways that other people would be, more open in a way that you look around the world to find inspiration. A painter might look around their surroundings and find something beautiful that they want to paint. A poet or a writer might do the same thing. A photographer, a musician, artists might just take in their surroundings in a different way. Also, maybe they can enter trance states more easily. I know that when I used to write a lot of fiction, the way that I would do that when I wanted to write is I had to go and take a walk and just kind of empty your mind and kind of zone out. So maybe artists can enter trance-like states. They can just open themselves up in a different way. Also, I mentioned the emotions. I don't know. I think that emotions can play into this in some way that I'm not really sure how to articulate, but I do just think that the heightened emotionality of artists could be a factor in it. And maybe they just interpret experiences differently than someone who's not artistic would be. Maybe someone who's just very logical job. They work construction or they are a surgeon and has to see the world very logically. Maybe they would have this type of experience and just either not think twice about it or just be able to fit it into logical terms. It's all about perception, right? Anyway, that was a tangent. So they saw an angel. And I mentioned at the top of the show how I love to find reports that are a little outside of just the normal UFO parameters. And they bleed into and overlap with other types of phenomenon. And so they saw an angel. It seems like that was the main story. So I can only assume that this witness reached out to Newfon with their reports about the angel and then had these other comorbid sightings as well, like psychometry and seeing unidentified crafts and unidentified lights and having an out-of-body experience. It is also fascinating. There was a story that they grew up with about the Lady of the Lamp. Did that play a role into what they saw? Does the legend that they were familiar with of the Lady of the Lamp play a role? Meaning if someone didn't grow up with the Lady of the Lamp story, would they have seen something different? I don't know. Just a little speculation there. Speaking of the Lady of the Lamp, I am currently on the search for her. I'm very interested in that story. I wish it wasn't quite so vague, but I'm assuming it's some kind of legend relating to Cheshire, circulating possibly in the 1950s. So I'm going to keep digging, but definitely looking for the Lady of the Lamp. All right, so now let's move on to our next report. August 24th, 1964, Lancashire. Jay arrived at work at 5:30 a.m. and was locking his motorcycle in the sheds. He was about to set off when he was drawn to a glow behind the clouds. As he stared at this partially obscured thing, his mind suddenly went blank. He has no idea when he came to, but the object had gone. He remained for some minutes staring at the sky, but it did not return. Next morning, same time, same place, exactly the same thing happened. He says he cannot even describe the object, as if his mind is controlled by the thing. Subsequently, he has had several memory lapses immediately prior to seeing the lights in the sky, and he thinks these act as triggers or warnings for the experience to follow. He has also had what he calls a night of terror when, quote, an explosion occurred in my head. This was real and could be likened to a red flash when short-circuiting occurs. What followed was more than a dream. I do not want to experience again the fear and terror it brought me, end quote. For the rest of the night, he wrestled with images of seeing the Earth from space that were slipping away and disappearing. He tried, but could no longer recall details of his UFO encounters or time lapses. Despite 3 hypnosis sessions, he has failed to recall any memories to fill in any gaps. And, of course, we are not even certain there are any gaps. I wonder if this case has interesting clues about the brain-mind interface and its relationship to the UFO encounter, since the symptoms here described are likened to a number of pathological conditions affecting memory retention and, of course, to recollection of non-registered dream imagery. I know that one was a little vague, although there was something in its vagueness that I found compelling. But it is definitely worth noting that this witness reported something that sounds a lot like exploding head syndrome, as we discussed in the first story. His exact words were, quote, an explosion occurred in my head. He pretty much spelled it out there. He also described experiencing, alongside the explosion in his head, a red flash, like when short-circuiting occurs. Now, I don't know exactly what he means by the red flash part, whether that means they saw a red flash and felt an electric shock sensation, or if it was a flash of pain. But it was noted that the feeling of electric shock can often occur during exploding head syndrome. So, whether that's what he experienced or not, I don't know. It is just interesting that it came up again. At least that was my interpretation. Besides that, like I said, I know that report was a little vague and kind of abstract in that he couldn't describe what he saw in the sky glowing behind the clouds, and he couldn't remember details of UFO encounters and time lapses, even when they tried hypnosis. And that did make me think that sometimes that is the quality of a supernatural experience. Sometimes you either can't really describe an experience well, or there are just subjectively minute occurrences that felt significant and impacted you in some way. And those can be the most frustrating, especially when trying to relate it to another person, because you can't really evoke what you felt, especially if you can't even describe what you saw. So not everything is a perfect, well-formed apparition or a narrative abduction. Some are beyond description. Very Lovecraftian, actually. The investigator writes at the end of the report, quote, I wonder if this case has interesting clues about the brain-mind interface and its relationship to the UFO encounter, end quote. And that is the basis of the study being done on correlation between exploding head syndrome and the belief in the paranormal. One of the amazing abilities of the human mind is to think about thinking, so why not exercise that? Now, on to the next report. Sheffield, South Yorks. Mr. H lived in the Totley area, overlooking the Derbyshire Peaks. At age 10, the first strange thing occurred. It was approximately 4:30 p.m. one day in 1972, and he was returning from school beside some waste ground when he saw a curious object, quote, rising slowly upwards. It was shaped like a fork with three prongs, like a trident, and was blue, similar to the flame of a Bunsen burner. The fork was composed of square-shaped particles with regular gaps between them, and more solid than a flame. It also glistened. As the thing rose slowly upwards, although time slowed down in his mind, and the area became oddly calm and quiet during the sighting, the particles kept in formation. The fork was 6 feet high and 3 feet wide. Mr. H, now a student, admits he cannot be certain of the Oz Factor effects, which may have been a coincidence, although they seemed odd to him. In August 1977, Mr. H went with a neighbor onto the moors to see a grass fire. They stopped for petrol on a sunny afternoon and watched for some minutes as a silvery yellow oval moved in the sky above them. It drifted from side to side, then downwards, then side to side again. Mr. H said it reminded him of a ball in a computer or video game. Eventually, the object shot upwards at great speed and vanished. 3 months later, he was in his garden when he heard a growling noise above. In the sky, he saw a bird the size of a large crow, but utterly fantastic in appearance. It was dark and had scales instead of feathers and bright red eyes. As it flew over, it opened the mouth on a face akin to a German shepherd and displayed a set of razor teeth. His sketch of the creature looks like a pterodactyl, reports of which have been made before, including over Yorkshire. If Mr. H is being truthful, then his sighting occurred at almost the same time as Ian Watson's novel Miracle Visitors was appearing, the classic UFO story based on the tulpa theory of matter-consciousness interaction. Watson set his tale in Yorkshire and featured a young student as the main character, whose UFO adventures begin with the creation of a pterodactyl over the moors. Watson has commented before that when he wrote his book, parts of it started to come true around him, which, given the theme of his story, what the mind thinks into existence can actually be brought into life, is, to say the least, remarkable when seen alongside this quote-unquote new case. All right, lots to that story. Very interesting, especially the last part with that weird creature. Face of a German shepherd, body of a large crow, but scales instead of feathers. Very, very strange, and unique to me. I was not familiar with the book mentioned, Miracle Visitors by Ian Watson, so I had to look it up. It was published in 1978, and I looked it up on the Internet Archive so I could flip through it, and it is on there. And the back cover of it definitely intrigued me. It says, "Djinn, fairies, demons, angels, elves, witches, UFOs. Throughout history, there have been reports of sightings of weird phenomena. Reports at once too consistent to be ignored, and then too absurd to be real. But what if they are real? What if they are all aspects of the same reality? A reality, at last, ready to unveil itself?" That sounds very interesting. I mean, you pretty much just can say fairies, elves, witches, UFOs, and I'm intrigued. And it is fiction. A better summary of the actual plot says that the main character uses hypnosis to help his patients reach altered states of consciousness. And when one of his patients recalls a close encounter, in both senses of the term, he dismisses it until he begins to have his own strange experiences. Quote, "Could UFOs be symbols projected from the collective unconscious? Are they messages from the biomatrix? Does the mind have the ability to project objects and people that are physically real, yet somehow illusory? A wonderfully fascinating, mind-bending voyage." End quote. So I may have to check it out. Let me know if you've heard of it, if I am crazy and so many people have heard of this and I missed a classic here. Definitely let me know. But I might have to check that out at some point. It definitely is selling all of the concepts that I am a big fan of. So, yeah, with that, I think we're going to move on to the next case. March 13th, 1990, Lancashire. Mrs. W., a cleaner at a local mill interested in fortune-telling, reports a spectacular event as she got off a train in the Tower Center at 3:45 p.m. on a dark day with much cloud cover. As she waited to cross busy traffic, she became aware of a, quote, movement of air up and down above me, then a metallic whir sound. Looking around, she saw nothing. Then, looking upward, she confronted nothing but clouds, which, after a minute or so, resolved into a, quote-unquote, circumference arc, which circled and spiraled in the center, which she said was simply enormous. It was so big, it filled half the sky, like a hollowed-out soup bowl. There seemed to be a few lights on it. As to why nobody else in a busy town center saw this, Mrs. W. notes that one driver did slow and look up. She is sure he saw the UFO, as, quote, I will never forget the look on his face after he saw the spacecraft. She also said passers-by were walking in odd slow motion at the time. She's worried because nobody else reported seeing the thing. Reputedly, she suffered an itchy rash on her scalp, severe migraine, and stomach pains for several days afterward. At age 30, she has not had them before. Investigators suspect that this could be an imaginative witness zeroing in on a dark cloud and reading the shape in. She agrees that at first she thought the UFO was a cloud, but stared at it for some time because it looked big and odd. The object never moved very fast and took some minutes to drift across the sky. Perhaps this is the case, but we cannot know, as Mrs. W. declined further investigation. She says that the experience is preventing her from sleeping. Quote, I was brought up not to believe in these things, so I will forget it. You please forget it too. End quote. She has had frequent dreams of, quote, being beamed up by these very thin, skinny, sad-looking human-like people. At first, they don't seem to have eyes, just fuzzy, grayish, dark circles. They are of small build, around 5'3". They have very pale, smooth skin. No blemishes, little hair, but it looks wiry, golden, blonde. They wore tight, uniform-like clothes. They also have a black badge with a white circular thing on. The, quote-unquote, abduction in her dreams is by an 80-pound female alien who pushes her into a circle of light and they're sucked up. She hates this as Mrs. W. fears heights. After opening her eyes, she is on a ledge and sees the streets below. She feels that the aliens are hungry and might eat her. Then she is forced into a room with just lights and a chair and an object like a dartboard, where she loses consciousness and comes out in great pain in her abdomen area. Before suddenly waking, quote, back at the crossroads, she sees a huge hairy ape man and a black wolf creature in the ship being led about by the aliens. Mrs. W. adds, quote, please understand, it was just dreams. Once again, we have a strange object in the clouds, and the dreams were very interesting. I love hearing dreams, and they were very detailed and very archetypal. I thought it was very interesting that the dream ended with her, after being on the ship, she wakes up back at the crossroads. Crossroads have such a significance in different folklore and myth and superstition. Obviously, they're a meeting place, a twixt and tween place. So it's very, very intriguing that this is where her dream would end and kind of seems like she was dropped off there by the ship. The very last thing she mentioned is that inside the ship, she saw aliens leading around what basically sounds like a Sasquatch and maybe like a werewolf or something. That's weird. aliens, Sasquatch, werewolves, or even just black dogs. These are all different figures and archetypes and symbols, or maybe even real paranormal entities. You can go into a lot of different interpretations with that. These were some very interesting experiences, very bizarre, but they were clearly very distressing to the witness, Mrs. W. And she seems to dismiss them at the same time that she's reporting them. So hopefully she was at least given some peace by telling her story to someone, even though she seems to try to recant it several times throughout, but she did end up sharing it, so hopefully that helps her in some way. All right, let's press on and read our next report. Dee from Birmingham reports a series of interesting events, which he has taken some time to steel himself to report. He says that, from a very young age, he has been, quote, thrown into something I would rather do without. The same goes for other members of his very close family. These incidents show well the thin dividing line between UFO close encounters of the fourth kind and other paranormal phenomena. As a baby of just a few months in native Jamaica, Dee suffered the first nightmare. His mother reports finding him foaming at the mouth and in a terrible state after a strange black figure had entered the room and flown out through the window. There was a terrific blast of wind accompanying it, and neighboring animals went crazy. On coming to England, his father began to have dreams about UFOs and aliens and going on board crafts, plus a strange room with a golden glow covered by strange symbols. The house also began to suffer major poltergeist events, including loud crashing noises, lights and TV switching on and off on their own, strange smells coming from nowhere, and mysterious mists and fogs appearing and disappearing. This was when the entire family lived together in a council house in a district of Huddersfield, West Yorkshire. On several occasions, around the age of 5 or 6, he either arrived at school far too early, in the dark, or was very late home without being able to recall why. The first UFO sighting followed soon after, a copper-colored cone above Bradley, seen also by his brother. Around 1977, now in his early teens, he saw many UFOs locally, including, quote, a bright globe the size of the moon making a cutting sound, and 5 blue lights, which played games with a police car above Nab Hill. Whilst these events were unfolding, a curtain of mist kept appearing on the landing of their house, and again in 1977, a small being appeared to his father as they prepared for the move to a new address in the town. 2 weeks later, Dee's father died suddenly. His mother also alleged that she witnessed the landing of an object in the fields by the house at this time. Dee left the area to live in a bedsit in the Midlands with an ex-girlfriend. One night, they were both awoken at 4 a.m. by a terrific thunderclap noise. Oddly, they went straight back to sleep. Dee recalls a soft female voice saying 3 times that he must write down the following message. He woke himself to do so in the dim dawn light. It was said in Old English. The message was this, quote, O you that looks in the time of Leviathan and Behemoth, and cannot see from where cometh the winds and storms of rain, or the arrows that fly by night, or the pestilence that walks at noonday, end quote. This witness is sincerely disturbed and frightened. His family do not know he has written in and reported these incidents, and he does not wish to involve them. He adds that, quote, I don't want to think that I've ever been abducted, but there are many blank spaces in my life, end quote. He has read much of the recent abduction literature. He says, quote, I know now that there are many people who suffer silently, end quote. We must realize what harm such writing may be doing by influencing witnesses into patterns of thought. How we handle such a case, or even if we are qualified to do so, is very much a matter of debate. that report is packed full with different things, right? One thing I wanted to pick out was the incident where the witness was living with their ex-girlfriend, and they were awoken one night by a terrific thunderclap noise. Now, I would probably go out on a limb and make a connection here to exploding head syndrome as well if there wasn't two people who heard the noise. I think that's a pretty much guaranteed negation of that theory if two people hear it. And then, so they're woken by a loud thunderclap noise and went straight back to sleep. It says, oddly, they went straight back to sleep. But this is something that you hear time and time again with strange experiences people have in bed. See something strange in their room, hear something, even something particularly terrifying, and they will just go right back to sleep, even though it doesn't seem logical that they would at all. I'm sure someone will argue that they never woke up and they were asleep the whole time. Let's talk a little bit about the closing statements that Ginny Randles writes, acknowledging that writing the material she does could influence and potentially harm people by introducing or reinforcing patterns of thought, possibly creating paranoia. I think it's very thoughtful of her to do so, especially when she is contacted by someone who is terribly troubled and admits that they have consumed a good deal of literature on the abduction phenomenon. And it is certainly a fair point, not without merit. It reminds me of when I was in a phase where I was consuming a lot of true crime podcasts, and I found myself becoming really paranoid and anxious that every stranger, every person I saw was out to kill me. And I didn't want to like take a walk at night. And if I had to pass somebody, I just thought they could murder me, which theoretically, I guess is true. But I was just very paranoid. Now, admittedly, I also wasn't in the best headspace in the time. I was in a bout of very poor mental health, a lot of anxiety and depression, not directly caused by all the true crime podcasts, but it wasn't really helping the situation either. So I think part of it has to do with what the mental state is of the individual. If someone is already in a vulnerable state, maybe prone to anxiety already, whatever stimulus they are taking in, particularly if they're taking in a lot of it, their fears, anxieties, obsessions, and upsets will be shaped and formed by that stimulus. Meaning that if I was already kind of in a bad headspace and then I was listening to all this true crime podcasts, it made me really paranoid that I was going to be murdered or abducted or something by a human though. So in this case, with UFO abduction literature, could be potentially harmful to someone, but mostly if they are already in a vulnerable state or in poor mental health. I get why Ginny Randles shared these concerns, especially when you're face-to-face with somebody, and you're talking to somebody, and then you think about how you have contributed all this UFO literature and stuff. So if you are taking in a lot of content, whether it's this kind of paranormal content or maybe true crime content, and you feel yourself getting really negatively affected, or maybe you just find yourself kind of consumed with those thoughts and topics in a distressing way, it's okay to take a break. And I actually have not really gone back to true crime podcasts. I ultimately found it kind of gruesome and depressing, whereas I find the things that I talk about more mentally stimulating. But to each his own, to each his own. That was a whole tangent. Hopefully that made sense. Let me know if you have thoughts on the matter. Anyone can go over the deep end with any interest or topic, right? Anyway, if you are up for consuming more UFO content, let's keep going. Here is our next report. October 1976, Cheshire. The local paper cited a 77-year-old named Gladys who had seen many UFOs and aliens since 1976. Her first was of a great golden ball trailing across the sky, which came toward her. She waved, and it flew back into the clouds. The same ball recurred many times later. In 1979, she felt a common psychic belief that there was, quote, something strange at the bottom of a friend's garden. So she went out there and confronted a 10-foot-tall silver man with no face and a much smaller head than body. She sensed electricity coming out of the man, and trees were lit up by its glow all around. It vanished in a flash. In the summer of 1985, she saw one of her golden ball things when walking over the hills. Her sightings of lights in the sky still go on today. All right, so Gladys, which I believe is a pseudonym, has multiple sightings of a great golden ball that goes across the sky, which sounds really beautiful. I thought it was really adorable that she waved at the ball when it came towards her. Very sweet. So she didn't seem to be afraid, right? And then in 1979, she had kind of a psychic notion that there was something strange at the bottom of a friend's garden. Really quickly, this is a very British phrase, the bottom of the garden. And I'll be honest, I think I know what it means as an American, but if you are from the UK or somewhere where they use this phrase, let me know if I'm wrong. The bottom of the garden, I think, and this is going to sound so egregious in my harsh Midwestern accent, but I think the American equivalent to the bottom of the garden is the back of the yard. I think it means the back of your property, right? Because I've had a really long and confusing conversation with my Irish friend James before about the difference between a garden and a yard. Because in America, your yard is your whole kind of property. It's usually a grass lawn or something, right? And your garden is where you, a small area of your yard where you plant flowers and vegetables and stuff. And I believe in the UK and Ireland, your garden is your whole property. And your yard is like a smaller enclosed space within your property. I think that's right. Surely someone can let me know. So I think the bottom of your garden is the back of your property. And I'm not going to fact check that. I'm just going to go with that. So she thought that there was something strange at the bottom of her friend's garden. So this is a phrase I am familiar with because it comes up a lot with fairies. There's a really common phrase that people say that fairies at the bottom of their garden. She saw fairies at the bottom of their garden. That's just a common turn of phrase. Usually, fairies are associated with strange sightings at the bottom of a garden, but this was a 10-foot-tall silver man with no face and a small head who lit up the trees around them and then vanished in a flash. Like a weird, very tall, faceless Tin Man figure is what I'm imagining. Very strange. That's a very unique sighting. Gladys sounds like a very lovely and interesting person. Let's go ahead and read just a couple more. Circa 1974, Lancashire. Mr. F was aged 9 when the incident occurred. He kept experiencing, quote-unquote, weird things in his small bedroom, the walls whirling and a feeling of being hypnotized. This suggests hypnagogic effects. Then he, quote-unquote, woke one night at 3 a.m. to find, quote, unusual-looking people all in black standing by his bed. He felt himself to be naked, but he was not undressed in bed, and being watched, he was drawn towards the curtains, which were filled with color patterns, and then an explosion of fear caused him to faint. He recalls nothing until morning. He believes there is some missing time. Something tells me, he says, and that he was woken by a sharp crack in the back of his head. The case was logged, but no further action was recommended, as this seems to be an altered state of consciousness with dubious direct relevance to the UFO phenomena. Once again, I have to say, does seem like exploding head syndrome could be a factor in this case. He was awoken by a sharp crack in the back of his head. Now, once again, with the vague description, I don't know if that's a sharp crack as in a noise in the back of his head or a physical sensation. So the investigators felt like this possibly just could have been part of the hypnagogic or hypnopompic processes, or maybe a part of sleep. They weren't sure. Just seemed like some kind of altered state of consciousness correlating to sleep, and that there wasn't enough for them to continue investigation as an instance of UFO contact. So, who knows? Who knows? Definitely sounds very strange, seeing little people in black in your room. And that actually, I think, is the illustration that I put on the thumbnail. It was on the cover of the journal that I read from. Nufon number 141. This next one's pretty long, I think, but quite interesting. So this is going to be from a UFO Times magazine, number 45. Let's take a look. Guildford, Surrey, January or February 1989. This is a fascinating case, which is reminiscent of these somewhat exclusive glimpses certain people experience, almost as though they are indeed looking through shimmering glass into other worlds. I have documented similar cases over the years of Peter Pan and goblin-type figures in the air or by the roadside. Indeed, the little people, as some people refer to them. The folklore of yesterday, today, and I have no doubt, tomorrow, too. Even now, they appear as the gray aliens of today's UFO culture. I wonder who and what they really are. Maybe they are whatever we would like them to be, our innermost nightmares or our fantasies, or just our fragile connection with something else out there, just out of reach. Marcia Hill was 12 years old in the winter of 1989, and she and a friend were having an evening together in her home in Guildford. Her parents had gone out. Her home was contained by a 6-foot privet hedge with patio doors from the dining room leading to the garden. It was 7:30 p.m., and the girls were watching TV, when suddenly there appeared to be a very bad reception with black lines moving across the screen. Marcia told me that the reception was always excellent in this area. The weather was clear, and from the corner of her eye, she noticed the amber lamps flickering. Her friend needed to visit the bathroom, and she went upstairs, followed by Marcia. Marcia went into her bedroom, and the light from the bathroom had lit up the garden. She was drawn to look into the center of the garden, where she saw a figure crouching there, which appeared to be white and had very long fingers. With these fingers, it appeared to Marcia to be stroking the grass, and she describes it as being in a fetal position on the grass. It did not appear to have a face. She did not feel scared and was drawn to watch it for what seemed to her to be at least 10 minutes. She turned to call her friends to come and see this figure, but when she turned back, it had gone. Her friend said she'd only been in the bathroom for a few seconds, and Marcia could not understand this, as she felt there was a time discrepancy somehow. Upon returning downstairs, the television was fine, and the lamps were no longer flickering. She told her parents upon their return, and they checked to see if everything was okay. After this strange incident, Marcia began to have nightmares, in the form of a recurring dream, which is still ongoing. She experiences this 2 to 3 times a week, and it takes the form of Marcia, herself, being lost near a high mountain range, and no matter how hard she tries, she cannot find her way out. She also has the impression of looking at this through frosted spectacles. Marcia also tells me that since this incident, she feels differently, and that she is not able to make friends and does not trust anyone. She says she is very cynical, and that the recurring dream has caused her severe problems in sleeping. What is quite interesting here is that her mother has confirmed to me that Marcia did change a lot after this incident, and she also told me that both she and Marcia had observed a very strange iridescent red ball of light prior to this. During my conversation with Elizabeth, Marcia's mother, she went on to tell me about a strange experience that she herself had had at the age of 17 in the winter of 1968. Elizabeth lived with her family in Bearsted, near Maidstone in Kent. She had left home at 7:10 p.m. to take the bus to meet a friend in Maidstone. She was walking to the bus stop, which was a few minutes away in a residential area, when she heard a noise. Elizabeth describes this as like the sucking noise in a vacuum cleaner. She then saw, silhouetted against the housing estate, an object which was like a fluorescent tube, pointed at both ends and about 15 feet long, moving slowly past the houses at tree height. It passed over her head, and she started to quicken her pace towards the bus stop as she was feeling apprehensive. She was by this time only 40 feet from the main road. She glanced over her shoulder, and there, right above her, completely silent, was the object. She began to run towards the bus stop shelter, and, looking back, observed the object silently hovering above the junction. At a nearby pub, two men came out and got on their motorbike, but did not appear to notice the object at all. She looked again and said, quote, "It was there, and then not there, and I had a powerful impression that it was there for me to look at," end quote. Several years later, Elizabeth experienced another unusual incident, this time with her husband. I am awaiting more information on this case report from both Marcia and Elizabeth in the form of drawings. Like they said at the beginning, fascinating case. It's always interesting when multiple family members have a history of paranormal activity, right? Marcia has this strange night where she sees a little kind of strange figure in the backyard, and it's not really doing anything except laying there or sitting there, stroking the grass. But while she's observing it, she seems to have a distortion in time. Time seems to pass a lot slower than it actually did, or at least it did for her friend who was in the bathroom. And then the incident that her mother had of seeing the weird fluorescent tube. I love just really abstract high strangeness reports like that. There's actually one in the Fairy Census that I read, but it's these two young men at a bus stop at night in England, and they, or one of them, I can't remember if it's both of them or just one of them, sees this weird gelatinous substance that's like shimmering, and it's very strange. And I love that they reported it to the Fairy Census too, because there wasn't seemingly a fairy in it. Very good stuff. Yeah, so I will have to see if I can find if there was any follow-up from Elizabeth and Marcia. So I'll poke around in the UFO Times, and if I do find that, I will definitely let you know. All right, so with that, I think we will move on to our final case report for the night. Victoria wrote to me after the first Bufora lecture here in Newcastle to report inexplicable events that have taken place in her life, specifically something that happened 3 years ago in June 1992. She had reported these events some time ago to various UFO researchers, but said she felt like a statistic. In June 1992, Victoria reports waking up in the night and looking out of her bedroom window and seeing a very bright light shining down through an area of fog. She describes this as, quote, "like a scene out of a Victorian time," end quote. There was no noise, but she saw what she thought were three children, about 3 feet in height and pale in color. There was someone else in the garden who appeared to be an adult wearing a dark suit or robe of some kind. She could hear chattering from the children, but had no idea what they were saying. Looking down, she could see them coming nearer, and they appeared to have what she described as a rope. She had the impression they were going to use this somehow to climb up to her window, but did not feel frightened. Instead, she felt that since the window was closed, there would therefore be no entry for them. She then returned to bed and did not wake her sleeping husband next to her. She cannot understand this. The next thing she became aware of was that there was a bright light and a silhouette that appeared to emerge through the curtains and come into the room. This terrified her, and she describes this entity as having no eyes, in that they were huge, but without a pupil and very pale. She remembers nothing after that, and the following day felt apprehensive, as though someone was watching her. She was afraid of being in the house on her own, and developed a fear of the dark and going to bed at night. This fear went on for a period of about 3 months, during which time she had impressions of different images from that night. She had the impression of being led along a tunnel, wearing a strange garment, by two small entities. She then became aware of being in something akin to a lift, and then in a room she describes as white, where someone was sitting at some kind of panel. These images would be very intense and upsetting, and fortunately, she began a 3-year college course on urban studies, which helped her to get her mind away from these strange events. There have been other inexplicable events during her life before the 1992 incident. At age 24, she experienced what she described as a vivid dream and remembers a woman with a pale face and dark hair standing at the bottom of her bed, begging Victoria to go with her. She has no other recollection of anything after this, except that she changed from being a happy-go-lucky person to being totally afraid of everything. Because of this, she insisted that her family make an exchange on their home in order to move. This apparently did not help much, but she started a secretarial course in the September of that year, which helped take her mind off this event. Victoria reports two other experiences, one at age 10, when she had another dreamlike experience in the night, and a girl appeared in her room at the bottom of her bed and beckoned Victoria to go with her. She says she did this, but doesn't remember anything after that. At age 5 years, she recalls very vividly strange lights in the hallway of a house where she lived with her parents in southern England. Victoria also said that her daughter, 10 years of age, used to suffer from night terrors. She is adamant these were not normal nightmares. In 1993, her daughter awoke screaming one night, and her chest was pounding. She told Victoria of gray monster's arms coming through her bedroom window and kept saying, quote, "I can't go with you," end quote. It took a great deal of time to calm her daughter. Victoria has been married twice and has 4 children by her first marriage, and her second husband has a 15-year-old daughter who, when she stays with them, sleeps in the bedroom of their youngest daughter, the one who experienced the night terrors. About a year ago, after staying with Victoria and her father, she told them that she had a wonderful dream the previous night where the quote-unquote Martians came and took her on a spaceship. Apparently, she often has similar dreams when staying with Victoria and her father. Victoria has kindly sent me drawings to try and give some visual impact of her experiences, some of which are documented here in the investigation's diary. What I found of great interest with the events experienced by Victoria is the fact that her 1992 experience is very similar to a description from another case that I investigated 2 years ago. Victoria could have no knowledge of this, as it has only been documented in Strange Days magazine. She had never even heard of this magazine, let alone read it. However, I have put her in touch with this other lady, as she was quite desperate to talk with someone else who had undergone inexplicable events of this nature. I found Victoria to be a totally pragmatic lady who needed to talk about these events at length, and my interview with her will be documented in a case file, which will be sent to Bufora's research department. So, Victoria, and the people around her, have a lot of experiences that all seem to be fairly similar. They pretty much all seem to involve entities or people of some kind that are beckoning or asking or taking people with them somewhere. So with Victoria, all these people, these entities she's seen, whether they're children or a woman, they've beckoned her to go with them. In one case, 2 children seem to guide her through a strange tunnel, and then going up in an elevator into some white room where someone was sitting at a panel. And then her daughter had a really troubling experience where she saw gray arms, monster arms, coming through her window, and the daughter kept saying over and over that she can't go with them. So it seems like someone was trying to get the daughter to come with them as well. And then her stepdaughter had a dream where Martians took her on a spaceship. She did mention one entity that was particularly creepy that appeared as having no eyes, but what she meant is that it had really large eyes that had no pupils, so just all white. And they do mention that she included drawings of some of these things, and those are in the magazine. They're a little spooky, especially that one of the entity with no eyes. It looks basically like a gray alien head with no pupils. If I remember, I will put a link to the images in the description of wherever you are listening. And then finally at the end, the investigator said that this was very similar to a description of another case that was documented in Strange Days magazine. And I went looking and I believe I did find the case they're referring to in Strange Days, but it is quite long because it's a full interview. So I won't be able to read it all now, but perhaps another time in the future. Well, we have come to the end of the broadcast. Thank you so, so much for joining me for this. I hope you enjoyed all the stories tonight, all these UFO case reports. I hope you found them to be strange and unusual and thought-provoking and entertaining. There were still several that I planned on reading that we didn't get to, and there are hundreds more out there. So tune in the future for more. And if you haven't heard the previous broadcasts, I do have a playlist on YouTube of all the UFO radio hours that I've done so far. This is number 4. Thank you for tuning in and taking the time to explore the unexplained and the unusual. I am your host, Goblin Queen. This has been the UFO Story Hour on KGOB Goblin Radio. I will see you all next time. Good night.